From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
My houseplants are sulking, whispering among themselves about, why doesn't that woman get us some more light in here? And then before I know it, seed starting season will begin with leeks and onions. But what's the right light to make those plants happiest indoors? More on all that in a moment, but first this message.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
Leslie Halleck is author of Gardening Under Lights, The Complete Guide for Indoor Growers. Since her graduate research at Michigan State, where she explored greenhouse production, Leslie's become an expert in the subject of light, and that's our topic today. So welcome. So glad to have you on the program and help me figure this out finally, Leslie.
Hi, Margaret. Hi. I'm so pleased to be with you.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
So I just have to ask, when you visit someone's home and you see their house plants, can you immediately diagnose how much or little light of the right or wrong kind they're providing? I bet you can.
Well, let's just say as a professional horticulturist, that's a sort of a disease, a problem I experience when I visit anyone's outdoor garden or indoor garden. I immediately start diagnosing issues. It's a little compulsive, and I always have to apologize for it, along with, you know, picking weeds or picking, you know, dead leaves off of other people's plants. It's a little bit of a problem.
I know. I'm always weeding.
Yeah. So, yeah. So if you are brave enough to invite me over to your house and you have plants in your house, it's probably where the conversation is going to steer. And so oftentimes, the biggest cause of houseplant and indoor edible growing frustrations is a simple lack of light. And it's very confusing for most home gardeners to grasp.
Yeah. You have in your, I think some of the pictures in the book are from your house. Not all of them, but I think some of them are. And you seem to have lighted plant situations of some very creative kinds. Just, you know, before we kind of dig into what kind of light and how to figure it all out, give us some examples of some of the spots in your house that are lighted, you know, for plants that are a little different.
Sadly, as a horticulturist, I have an incredibly dark house, so it's unfortunate for me. However, you know, that means I've had to get creative about a lot of different grow lighting options. And I grow in all different areas in my home and my garage. And I'm also very particular about my style.
Right.
And as you probably noticed, a lot of good quality, powerful grow lamps aren't necessarily aesthetically pleasing. You know, you're not going to want to stick, you know, a CMH, a ceramic metal halide lamp with a big metal hood in your living room for your citrus trees, right? Not a great thing. So I've really had to experiment using all different sorts of lights and fixtures and create and build some of my own to integrate them into my living spaces to look the way that I want them to. And then I keep the utilitarian things like the grow tents and the big grow racks and the big lamps out in my garage.
I see.
Which I call my plant lab. Yeah.
But yeah, you have
like
spotlights and you have
grow tents, everything. And then inside my house, I have built wall pockets with recessed grow lighting so you don't see the lamp itself, which is a nice way to keep herbs and small edibles and things near the kitchen, and then built nicer fixtures in other open areas of my home, and then have looked for nice-looking spot lamps that are grow lamps that I can use with my attractive big house plants or little plant vignettes, as I call them, that I like to create around the house.
Yeah, it was a very inspirational, and with the transcript of the show, we'll show some of those pictures, because some of them, like you said at the beginning, you know, some of the fixtures you wouldn't want to live with in your living room, but you were able to ferret out ones that I would, and I thought, oh, huh, now that could make a difference.
Yeah.
So very creative.
Yeah.
So, you know, many of, you know, I have to confess that my head starts spinning when either I read or I read on packages or even in the book, you know, about all the different kinds of lights and the sort of, not chemistry, but almost like chemistry of light, you know, the formulas and how it all works, the colors and the intensities and so I want to shut down. But I was able to find in your book like practical advice, and so I sort of want to get to some of that and share that with people. You know, many of us gardeners have heard about things like, you know, a short day onion variety versus a long day onion in the catalogs, or, you know, we hear that, you know, poinsettias need a certain amount of darkness before they bloom, and it's like, in the book, you mentioned like it's almost like plants have circadian rhythms or know how to tell time. Can you talk a little bit about that and sort of demystify that for us?
Yeah, so what you're referring to are the physics of light, because technically that's what it is, it's physics. So I do include a little bit of that light science in the book, because I feel like if you're interested in the topic, all of you people are smart enough to absorb a little bit of science, right? That's not going to hurt us.
Right.
but you can skip around. But I also say, you know, you can skip around and piece out just the practical information I give you. So you certainly
absolutely
don't have to dig deep into that if you don't want to. But yes, if you think about how plants evolve in nature, right, there are very, very different climates where plants evolve. And some of them are very cold and snow-covered, and some of them are very warm. And at those different latitudes, you have different lengths of night and lengths of day, so light versus darkness. So plants evolved, based on where they're endemic, to be able to reproduce successfully based on those environmental conditions.
Right.
So you certainly wouldn't want to, if you're an onion or a garlic, you certainly wouldn't want to come up in flower while there's still snow on the ground.
Right.
Right? Because, yes, so plants are have evolved to be able to flower and reproduce when environmental conditions are favorable. And so along with that has come what are called photoperiods, photoperiod responses for certain plants. So when you see those short-day, long-day onions in the catalog, a short-day onion is going to require a long night period, a short day period in order to be able to flower. And garlic, for example, also requires a vernalization or exposure to cold temps, long nights in order to trigger that bulbing and flowering. So it's a safety response for reproduction.
Mm-hmm.
And so some plants have very hard, fast requirements for certain lighting regimens. And so we call them short day, long day plants, but really what it is, it's the plant responding to the length of darkness or nighttime.
Okay.
So it's a little bit reversed.
Okay, yes. Okay. So it's photoperiod, but it's really about how much darkness there is.
Yes, okay. Uninterrupted darkness. And I explain that a little bit in
yeah.
the book.
Oh, I know you do. Yeah.
It's hormones and pigments that sort of biologically change in darkness mm-hmm. and change in lightness. So that is a plant's clock, if you will, their inner biological clock. So that's how they tell whether it's light or dark, and then it also helps them measure the season. So they know when it's the right time to flower and make seed and when they need to hold tight.
So, for instance, my grandmother a million years ago, my late grandmother, she was a garden club lady. She did mums, which she did single stem, you know, mm-hmm. standard, disbudded them and had single big flowers at the top. And she would, I think she had some kind of place where she like covered them all or what. There was
yeah.
some rig going on, as I remember it a million years ago at her house. So, and poinsettias, I think, is another one. So that's about how many hours of darkness, and what about if it's interrupted? And tell us about a little bit about that.
Correct, right. So certain plants have requirements, and certain plants are speeded up to flower with periods of darkness. So she was black clothing.
Black clothing.
So for those of us that were in graduate school before we had automated black cloth systems, or you worked for a greenhouse grower that was producing a plant with a photoperiodic requirement, you basically had to cover, you had to tent those plants with blockout cloth, black cloth, to cut out all of the light exposure so that those dark periods were not interrupted for a certain amount of weeks.
Right.
And then the plant is triggered to flower. So those mums were short day plants, meaning she had to cut out the light and keep it at a certain number of hours for a certain period
okay.
of time in order to get those mums to create a flower bud.
Okay. Sort of another thing about plants' reactions to light or dark that I loved reading about, in this case it was seeds, you talked about that mystery that sometimes happens. You know, some packets say don't cover this particular seed, and there's a reason. You explain the reason in the book why some seeds can't be covered, and they won't germinate if they're covered by soil. And
yeah, some plants, such as certain lettuce species, won't actually germinate unless the seed is exposed to some red light. red light wave, you know, while it's going through that germination process. And so it's a good thing to pay attention. So, you know, sometimes folks will say, I started all these lettuce seeds and I can't get them to germinate. And I ask them, well, did you cover them up with soil? And they say, well, yes, that's what you're supposed to do, right? Well, not for everything. And so definitely pay attention to the seed packet, and it will tell you whether to cover them or not cover them. And if it tells you not to cover them, simply press them into the soil, that means those seeds need some light exposure, or or they're not going to germinate, or you're going to have poor germination rate.
Right. You know, and as I said earlier, you know, my head sort of spins a little bit when I try to grasp all the measurements of light and so forth. But what impresses me and what I kind of took away from the book is what we see with our eyes, both the spectrum of the colors that we can see, the range of light that we see, and also our sense of how intense or not intense it is, and a plant's sense of those things is very different. So we say, oh, that's a really bright light. Like, we couldn't really look into it close up. But to a plant, it may be not much light at all. So is that,
Right. So, So our human eyeballs perceive light differently than the light that plants use for photosynthesis.
Right.
So plants use light from the sun or light from grow lamps that we give them to drive photosynthesis. And the wavelengths of light, the colors of light, if you will, within the spectrum of visible light that are useful for photosynthesis are a little bit different than what we as people perceive as brightness. So humans perceive brightness. And which color of light do you think that our eyeballs perceive as the brightest color of light? Do you remember?
I don't know.
Green.
Green, okay, right, okay.
Green light.
And
green light. So we perceive green light to be bright. However, in the spectrum of what we call PAR, photosynthetically active radiation, your botanical acronym for the day, green light is actually one of the least efficient colors of light for driving photosynthesis.
Even though most plants are green.
Yes. And so the plant does use green light for certain biological functions and a little bit for photosynthesis, but it's not efficient. It's not the most efficient light for photosynthesis. So what we perceive as a bright lamp might not be as useful to a plant. So simply looking at a grow lamp and saying, oh, well, that's really bright, that doesn't mean anything to your plant. What that lamp needs to do is put out the spectrum of light that's most efficient for photosynthesis in the volume that it needs
required
to drive enough photosynthesis.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just about color of light, it's about amount of light. And the easiest way for me to explain this in layman's terms is to think of individual photons of light like raindrops that are coming down.
I loved that analogy in the book. Yes, like raindrops.
Yeah, because again, we sort of incorrectly perceive it as a brightness factor, when in reality, they're the red and blue light spectrums are the most efficient for photosynthesis. And that's why you see all those LED grow lights out there that look pink.
Yes.
Because they're only blending red and blue light, or red and blue with maybe a couple of other colors. So that's not full spectrum light. That is concentrated blue and red light, because that's going to be the most efficient way to drive the photosynthesis. So if you're growing edible crops for commercial reasons and you want to grow them fast and full, you know, you want to do that as efficiently as you can. So that's why all those vertical gardens you see and the shipping containers that they convert are full of pink light. In your living room, you don't want that. The full spectrum. Yeah, right. Not exactly.
No.
Unless you're going for a disco vibe, you know, that's fine. But most of us are going to look for full spectrum grow lamps that are going to provide all of the colors that plants can use. But then it has to produce enough of those raindrops to drive photosynthesis. And that's where a lot of people run into trouble with their seedlings.
So the photons are like the raindrops. Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So.
Yes. And you have to add up. And different plants, different species of plants need different amounts of light, and then different biological functions. So if you're growing leafy greens and vegetables, you can get away with providing a less amount of light than if you're trying to fruit tomatoes or citrus. Because making the flowers and fruits and seed are a lot of energy.
Right.
So just like, you know, if you grow lettuce outside, you know you can get away with sort of a part sun part shade exposure, but that's not going to work for tomatoes, right?
Yes.
So tomatoes have to have full sun, and it's because they need that accumulation of volume of light throughout the day in order to have enough juice to make those flowers and fruits.
Yeah. So I thought it'd be kind of fun to talk about some specific plants and different kinds of lights, kind of almost like matching as if we were thinking about shopping for the right kind of light for different uses. And I will confess just a little sort of anecdote. You know, years ago when I first started, and this is decades ago, I started growing my own seedlings, for instance, indoors. You know, I made one of those kind of a rack, you know, well, you can buy them, of course. And I had lights on it, and they were shop lights, and they had one cool white and one warm white fluorescent bulb. And that seemed like a lot of light, you know, and it worked and whatever. Now, you know, fast forward decades, and now I use T5, a different kind of fluorescent tube, narrower but more efficient in a mirrored, that's not the word, reflective hood, so that it really, it bounces more light, I guess, down, you know, toward the plants. And
so you get more volume of light.
Yeah, and it's so bright, but even that's not, as bright as a spring day in May in my region. Do you know what I mean? That's not even as bright as outside.
I
carry my babies outside on fair days into a protected spot, not, you know, baking them right away on their young lives, but because they get so much more light. You know, it's really different when you start studying, like what's in your book, you know, the measurements of light. So should we start with houseplants, or should we start with seed starting? Should we start with some houseplants because it's that time of year, like orchids? A lot of people love to grow orchids, but then they just kill them after one season. You know, they get them in spike.
Well, a lot of people bring, you know, some more sun-loving plants indoors for the winter, or, you know, they're buying new houseplants and orchids. So, again, you know, flowering versus foliage production takes more energy. And so winter... Okay, your ambient, your natural light levels outdoors goes down because our sun angle goes down, right? Mm-hmm. So we have less light available to us coming in through our windows in our home. And what else changes? The length of the day.
Yeah.
So the number of hours of light that we get also gets cut off. So what changes? The volume of light decreases significantly indoors. So just at the time that you need to move all of these things inside, or you want to flower your orchids, it gets that much dimmer indoors. And again, to your eye, it might not seem that different, but if you actually pulled out a light meter, you would be shocked at the difference between that light right outside your window and just a foot inside your windowsill.
Yeah.
Drastically dropped. And every inch you move away from that window or you go into a corner, you might have a completely different light zone, from something that needs high light to a couple of feet away, all you can maintain is something that tolerates very low light conditions. And that's where a lot of people get in trouble, and they think that they can maintain a lot of things just on their windowsill. It doesn't matter if you have a bright southern windowsill, it's still not bright enough for a lot of plants, especially if they're blooming plants.
Right.
So supplemental lighting is what you're looking to provide, and you may keep those plants in the windowsill and add a spotlight, add a grow light. So there's some nice small LED bulbs that can fit into standard home lamp fixtures or lighting fixtures, and those are going to be good options for individual houseplants, individual orchids, or small groups of orchids or succulents. But there are also some small panels, little LED panels, you know, that cover a couple of square feet that are good for orchids. A lot of the little self-contained growing units that have a couple of LED bars or T5H high-output fluorescents are good for orchids. So those units are going to be good for keeping orchids happier through the winter. You don't need a big lighting rig for those, but you do need to provide some supplemental light support.
Right. Now, and people also bring, so for instance, succulents have become such a thing, and a lot of people bring home succulents, and you know, let's just be real. They didn't evolve and adapt to a place anywhere like my northern garden, my northern house.
No, they are full sun plants, and that's why most people kill them, is that they bring them inside into what are very dim conditions for succulents, and then they do what? They water them.
Yes.
That's the kiss of death, because a lot of people don't realize that when light levels go down, so does the rate of photosynthesis and water uptake. So the plant can only use those resources, like water you give it, if it has enough light to keep using it.
Yes.
So when the light levels go down and you add a little bit of water to that succulent, it's going to turn to mush because there's not enough light. So LED spotlights, again, the little self-contained grow units with a couple of grow lamps,
yeah,
you know, a couple of bars are good for that. That'll provide you with sort of a medium light level. So your succulents, your orchids, and things like that, we'll all be happy with those. But take care not to use incandescent bulbs. There are still some incandescent bulbs being sold as grow lamps. Don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Don't do that. They're very inefficient, and they produce a lot more heat than
heat.
They can use
yes.
the light. So skip,
yes.
Yeah. A lot of yeah. heat. And that's what grow lamps do. They produce two things. They pull that energy out of the wall, right? And then they convert it to either usable light or heat. So the more efficient the grow light, the more light it produces versus heat. That makes
right.
sense?
Yes, absolutely. And you know, that's one of the things with my seed starting and so forth. It was great to get to expose those little tender babies to the least amount of heat with the most amount of light, that combination. Do you know what I mean? Let them not grow in a hot baking environment stretching toward a weak light source anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the trick with seedlings, is that you really have to, so those two lamp fixtures I was talking about that are good for maintaining some of your houseplants and orchids, you've got to double that for seedlings.
Right.
You've got to double that for seedlings. So what most people don't realize is that seedlings need a large volume of light. And so that's when you see the recommendations to keep your seedlings light at 14 to 16 hours a day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's not because they're long day plants. And I see a lot of misinformation online about that. They need 14 to 16 hours of light because they need the accumulation of volume of light. It's cumulative. So they've got to keep absorbing all of those light photons in order to have enough, you know, to successfully germinate. And that means putting those lamps pretty close, 3 or 4 inches above your seedlings.
Right.
So the new retrofit LED T5 bars that go into your fluorescent fixtures are a great option for that, and I like to have 4 of those lamps over my trays of seedlings.
Oh, so we can retrofit is it just for the high output LED, T5 fixtures that can take those bars, those LED bars?
Yes, yes.
Uh-huh.
So if you have a standard HOT5 fluorescent lamp fixture that holds, you know, 4 to 8
yes.
lamps, you can actually take out those fluorescent tubes. Which, by the way, HOT5s are still a good, efficient option. Those,
yes.
those are not obsolete yet. So if you're using those are still a good option for you. The LED retrofit bars have the same little fixture on them, and you pop them into that fixture just like you would a fluorescent. And it allows you to provide that bright light for your seedlings, but they generate a little less heat, so you don't have as much heat output right next to your seedlings.
Yeah. We only have a minute or two left, and I just wanted to say, are you optimistic about the sort of pricing on the LEDs continuing to come down and then become more in reach? Because I've hesitated. I've stuck with my T5s, like I said, with my reflective hood, mm-hmm. because it just was crazy to, you know, they work well, like you also said. You think that are the LEDs starting to really come down in price, be more affordable?
Yes. Yeah, so what you're paying for with LEDs is still some of that innovation. There's
right.
a lot of innovation going on with LED grow lamps right now, and the options are getting better and better. They did not start out being very good grow light options, but in the last they did not, and they were very expensive. Now, they just didn't put out enough light volume. And be careful, because there's a lot of really cheap, low-quality LEDs on the market coming out of China, and a lot of them will burn out quickly or just do not create as much light as they should. So you're still going to want to buy a good-priced quality LED grow lamp in whatever configuration they come in. But I do think in the next couple of years, prices are going to continue to get better, and the light output is going to increase on LEDs. You're going to get a better value for what you spend with LEDs.
Well, that is your professional evaluation prediction. And thank you. I love the book, Gardening Under Lights. I mean, there's so much to learn. I have to dig back in now that we've spoken before I go off shopping for anything new. And those spotlights for some of the possible living room plants really appeal to me. So thank you for that, too. It's good
Absolutely.
To talk to you, Leslie. Thank you.
Yes, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
Thanks for listening, and I hope to speak to all of you again soon. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or iTunes. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook and Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening indoors and out meantime.